Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Non-essential businesses in New Zealand must now close. All bars, restaurants, cafes, cinemas, pools, museums, libraries, playgrounds, any other place where the public congregate must close their face-to-face function. All indoor and outdoor events cannot proceed. In short, we are all now preparing as a nation to go into self-isolation. These decisions will place the most significant restrictions on New Zealanders' movements in modern history.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Imogene Takawingwa. I'm Dr. Imogene Kelly, an audiovisual historian with Manatū Taonga, the Ministry for Culture and Heritage. And this is Kei Roto Tui Te Miru, Inside the Bubble. As lockdown loomed and you gathered your whānau, your supplies, your nerves, we corralled a team of oral historians, grappled with technology and digitally, found our way into 25 unique New Zealand bubbles to capture your Aotearoa as you made history. It was a journey all 5 million of us made collectively, as we prepared.
And so my sister went crazy and bought so much cans. She became the panic shopper. And I became the wingman to the panic shopper.
We cared.
I'm working part-time nursing. The first 2 weeks was very scary because we didn't know what was going to happen within the hospital.
And we moved. Particularly
going on lots of government-mandated walks outside.
And
I see a lot of older people, people who look to be in their 70s and 80s, who I don't think you would normally see out on bikes.
And we learned.
And I tried to learn guitar. I learned 3 songs during the quarantine. And we have 4 guitars in the hostel, so that was a perfect opportunity.
We kept the homeschool thing happening. We made marshmallow putty and we did painting and we exploded volcanoes.
And even though we couldn't be together, we connected.
I'm encouraged by the goodness of humans. I think there are the silver linings of connection and us seeing the best that we can be and caring for ourselves and our neighbours.
And now we remember. In this episode, we'll look back at how we cared for ourselves, for those around us, and for those we couldn't be around.
If community transmission takes off in New Zealand, the number of cases will double every 5 days. If that happens unchecked, our health system will be inundated, and tens of thousands of New Zealanders will die.
The stark words of the Prime Minister 2 days before we headed into full lockdown. A scary thought for all of us, that if things got really bad, we might be turned away from overflowing hospitals, maybe even left to die. But what was that message like for those who'd really be in the front line? Those whose bubbles were not just themselves, or a clutch of their nearest and dearest, but everyone they came into contact with as they stepped out to work at a hospital, a clinic, or a testing station in a doctor's car park. How did they keep their own families and homes safe from the invisible threat?
Well, at the beginning, there was definitely about social distancing. What do? Do I stay in another room, etc.? And that, I guess that's fears lots of health professionals
feel when they come back into their bubble.
That's Liz. She's a nurse in the community, so her job involves going into other people's homes and rest homes too.
I see probably, 9 to 11 patients a day. They are mostly people over 60, and it's close contact work, dealing with wounds, with catheters, with people who are dying. It's all close contact work, so there's no way you can social distance with that work.
Liz had to go to some lengths to make sure her family bubble wasn't contaminated when she came home from work.
Really, it was a matter of coming home, and so I just leave my shoes outside. I come up, I just get my uniform into a different place from the other washing. I get my shower, I wash all my uniforms separately from everything else. So I just kind of had this routine of just changing how I even launder my clothes and just making sure that I showered before getting back into my other life, I suppose.
And her work itself took a lot of reconfiguring. While a lot of patient visits in clinics around the country were using phone or video calls, that wasn't really an option for most of Liz's patients.
It's too hard. They're not a generation that would be able to send a photo in, of a wound or something like that. And to be honest, it became so structured it was just as easy to go and do the visit and deal with it from there.
And it wasn't just patients and her family at home she needed to look out for.
I have a dad in a retirement village with his partner, and they were very mindful of not going out of, out of the apartments. They were quite strict, and that was good. They needed to be.
So from a distance, she kept an eye on him, made sure he was okay.
It's a bit weird. Every now and again, we'll go for a walk, and I'll stand on the corner and ring him up and say, come and wave to me. And so he waves to me from his balcony. And we have a chat on the phone, but at least I get to see him.
We can probably all think of someone we had to care for. In my case, my husband Jay and I were there for each other. And like Liz, I had an elderly dad to think of too. But when I listened to the recording our oral historian had captured with this woman, I was blown away.
Kia ora, my name is Titi Hoia Keelan. I am from Tūhoe in Ngāti Porou. I am a lash and brow tech, and I live in Manurewa, Auckland. And that's a little bit about myself.
Titi Hoia is a wife, a mum to 5 kids, and she runs her own beauty salon business. You know that saying, if you want something done, ask a busy person to do it? Well, I reckon Titi Hoia is that person. Her bubble was huge, complex, and unrelenting. But when it comes to caring for her whānau, she's unrelenting too. Here's how her lockdown unfolded. So, first up, her beauty business had to shut.
There were so many things going through my mind, like how were we all going to cope?
When it's business as usual, she often works on 10 to 12 clients a day and sometimes doesn't finish at her salon until 1 o'clock in the morning. The government help she got was nowhere near what she can normally earn in a day. So money got really tight.
Because it was hard, you're so used to getting everything that you need and you want. Yes. And then during the whole lockdown period, you got to prioritise what's really important on your little budget that you had. I think, how much was I getting from the government? Because my rent alone is $700 a week. And the amount I was getting from the government wasn't even that. So, it was really difficult because we had to prioritise, what's important? The power's important. The water's, because up here we got to pay for the water. And I'm like, the water's important. So, the food was covered because I did a big ass shopping before the whole thing. So I was like, oh, yeah, that's covered. And then the rest would go towards the rent.
And then her bubble unexpectedly expanded from just her family of 5 to...
13.
Technically against the rules, but needs must. She had to look after her whānau.
So the truth is all the parents to those children were drinking throughout the whole lockdown. And I didn't like the state that the parents were in. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to take your kids. I'm their auntie. I'm the one, if I see the kids, not in a good space, I'll take your kids.
She's got a bit of a rep in her family.
Yes, I'm the auntie that saves everyone.
Because?
Someone has to be responsible.
But how do you manage physical distancing with 13 in the house?
Oh, we definitely didn't keep our distance with the kids. I mean, it was really hard. And I'll tell you something, the police actually came over while those kids were here. Like, I think one of the neighbours must have called up and was like, hey, she's got heaps of kids over there. Because, you know, it was still a bit sunny around that time, so I always let the kids go outside. And the police actually came over and they were like, oh, you know, you got too much people here. And I was like, yeah, I understand. But I told them the situation, you know. At first, they were, you know, oh, you need to take the kids home. But then after I told them the situation, they were like, oh, you know, it's good that you've done what you've done. Yes. And I was like, yeah, because would you rather these kids look after themselves? And they're all under the age of 8, actually, all of these kids. So would you rather them look after themselves or would you rather someone come and take them in? So they understood where I was coming from in that area.
Dealing with 12 children and the disruption to normal life was a struggle.
Especially with my autistic daughter because she loves routine. And if everything goes out of whack around her, that's when the rest of us fall.
And while she was taking on extra caring responsibilities, the help she usually relies on for her daughter disappeared.
No, I had no services, nothing at all available to me for my daughter. Like, and my whānau, because my family, they live far away from me. So it was really hard. Like, none of them could be here for me. Usually I have a lot of help. Like, my sisters will travel from wherever they're from and they'll come and help me. But because of the restrictions, there was no help at all.
Did you ever get that feeling amid the chaos of lockdown of, help, where are the adults? I can admit to maybe feeling a bit like that at times, but I seriously doubt that thought even crossed Titi Huia's mind. 13 meals to make, 3 times a day, 13 sets of clothes to wash, and 12 children to keep occupied. How did she cope?
I think it's because I'm used to it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm growing up with my nan and, like, helping my nan out. Because my nan is the type, like, she'll go look after the elders, so me and my sister will be with my nan. And, you know, we were used to the whole making big kai and everything and taking it around. We were used to helping out the elders with their washing and everything. It's just a normal thing.
I'm Dr. Emma Jean Kelly, and you're listening to Kei Rotui Te Meru, Inside the Bubble, a collection of oral histories recorded during the 2020 nationwide COVID-19 lockdown. Lockdown. Here's a dictionary definition. A temporary condition imposed by governmental authorities in which people are required to stay in their homes and refrain from or limit activities outside the home. But what if you were one of the estimated 50,000 New Zealanders who don't actually have a home?
We work with people that are homeless, people that live in shelters and cars, off the grid in the bush, are living in overcrowded situations. We were very concerned for their lack of housing stability. So we knew there was hardly any supply. And so we saw it as our responsibility to get things up and running as quickly as possible to get that whānau into hotels or motels.
That's Elizabeth Cassidy Nelson. She's the chief executive of 155. It's a community organisation in Northland that helps homeless people find somewhere to live. It also runs support services like free cooked meals, legal help and a food bank.
The requests for food parcels increased threefold. The organisation works with the most vulnerable, and what we're seeing at this time is vulnerability levels have risen considerably. People have lost 20% of their income, people have lost their jobs, people are struggling to survive. And so, of course, our community is that much larger now. So our ability to manage and support those additional families. So we were pretty thin on the ground. and working significant hours in order to meet those needs.
During lockdown, people across Aotearoa used to rough sleeping, living in their cars or couch surfing were given somewhere to stay. For the first time in decades, only a handful of people were reported as being homeless. Some families pulled together to get a roof over their heads.
I'll start with a sad story. That is dropping off a food parcel to a whānau with 22 living in a two-bedroom house. And I'm just really concerned for the conditions in which they're living in and that they have no other options. But there's a button that. But when I drop this food parcel off, I saw these beautiful, smiley little faces waving out the window, excited about the food that was about to arrive in their doorway. You know, so their experience and their picture for themselves, it still looked like a good one. But in terms of rights, I want to see those families having their own home. We've placed over 56 people into motels. We'll be doing another 13 more and hopefully more in the next 2 weeks.
Elizabeth says the urgent action taken in lockdown showed that we actually can solve most of the problems of homelessness when we have to.
I think all forms of communication have stepped up. So, you know, with physical distancing, we absolutely have been on the ground in communities doing that face-to-face stuff because you kind of have to. But in terms of teams and working alongside other organisations, absolutely digital technology is where it's at. And the world that we're learning now is the world we need to maintain in terms of instant communication and being able to work together. It's been a highlight, I guess, of this time, is that everybody's getting on board and we're connecting much more regularly. And through that, I'm seeing a real, true collaboration, collective action across organisations that we haven't quite had before.
And while caring for the homeless during lockdown was at times difficult and heartbreaking, for Elizabeth and her team, the upheaval did bring some unexpected positive change.
Now, ironically, there are lots of blessings that come out of these situations. The biggest one, of course, is people are getting homes. And after this, they're not going to get biffed out. They're going to have somewhere to live. That is the biggest blessing of all.
I'm Dr. Emma Jean Kelly, and that was We Cared, our second episode for Kei Roto I Te Miru, Inside the Bubble. The series was written and executive produced by Teresa Cowie. Sound was designed and woven by Anaru Dalziel. Our production coordinator was Georgie Keyes. And the music was by Stephen Payton. The lockdown oral histories you heard in this episode were recorded by Tuara Tini Ra, Debbie Dunsford, Jackie Keelan, and Alex Mason. Our thanks to Manatū Taonga, the Ministry for Culture and Heritage, Auckland Libraries, especially Sue Berman, RNZ for the News Archive, and of course to those who shared their bubble with us, Liz, Titi Huia Keelan, and Elizabeth Cassidy Nelson. Ngā mihi nui kia koutou. If you want to listen to their full interviews, head to the Auckland Libraries website and search for Inside the Bubble. In the next episode, we'll look back at how we learned. Remember this?
So you haven't... Sorry, you go.
No, you go.
Or maybe something like this.
What was kind of happening there? Oh, can you hear me? Did it... the baby just muted me.
Join me again to remember that unwelcome crash course in technology. Ka kite anō.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.